What really gets my dick hard is...
Hey, this is Rye from Sabbath Bloody Podcast, and my brothers, Clint and Ethan, are about to shove some metal up your podcast, one episode at a time.
Right from the start, I knew. You'd set a fire on me, and I'd rather be sad with you than anywhere away from you. And hey, can't believe I captured your heart. Oh, can't believe I captured your heart. Sad with you than with any other girls but you. And hey, I can't believe I captured your heart. Oh, I can't believe I captured your heart.
What's up, folks? What you just heard was one of my favorite songs from a band called Bleachers. It's the main project by a guy named Jack Antonoff, who, if you don't know, is the he was a musician in the band Fun. He's a big-time songwriter. He writes songs for Taylor Swift and, I believe, Lorde, and he's just all over the place. Great songwriter, really cool dude. It's this really cool, like, sort of 80s kind of nostalgia stuff, but it's quirky and indie, really heartfelt lyrics, great production. That was from an album called Strange Desire from 2014, and written by Jack Antonoff, John Hill, and Patrick Berger. Now, you may be asking yourself, what the fuck is going on? I thought this was a Metallica podcast. Well, it is. If you're joining us for the first time, Metal Up Your Podcast is, of course, a podcast dedicated to all things Metallica, hosted by myself, Clint Wells, my dear friend and co-host, Ethan Luck. If you heard last week's episode, you've heard through touring logistics. I'm on tour right now in San Bernardino, California. Ethan today is on tour in New York City, and we just couldn't make it work logistically. And, you know, Ethan and I talked on the phone today. He's really bummed. He sends all of his love. He hates missing these episodes about as much as I hate doing them alone. And we are just, we were talking today and just amazed that it didn't happen sooner. We've gotten away with this relatively unscathed until, of course, last week. So the good news is we got a lot of positive feedback last week, and so we decided that, once again, finding ourselves in a bind, it would make sense to do Metal Up Your Podcast Radio. Now, this is going to be Volume 2, or Part 2, or Chapter 2, however you want to delineate it. And what we've decided to do is branch out of Metallica. Last week I did 10 of my favorite deep cuts, and what's going to happen is I played you the songs. I talked about why I liked them, why I considered those deep cut Metallica deep cuts underappreciated, why I thought they deserved to receive a little bit of love. This week I decided to play you 10 of my favorite songs from the last 5 years. And I'll tell you what sparked it is I was on the old Metallica forums, which is... it's an interesting place. There's a lot of really cool shit going on over there, and there's a lot of really interesting stuff that I'm sure is ever-present on really any forum, where a bunch of different kinds of people want to get together and talk about stuff. But one of the conversations happening over there right now that I find frustrating is this idea that there's no good music anymore. And, you know, why? We're the next Metallicas, we're the next U2s, the Beatles, etc. Valid question. And the answer, I think, is really complicated. But one thing that I don't think is the answer, but gets parroted a lot, is, well, there's just not good music anymore. And good music rises to the top, and if there was better quality of music being made, we'd have all these supergroups again. I couldn't disagree with it more. There's a lot of infrastructure erosion happening within the industry, some of it good, some of it bad. It's hard for music to find its way in a quality way to people. It's easier than ever to make a record and throw it on SoundCloud. But the benefits of the machine, where you would have a decent budget to make quality recordings, you would be able to really publicize it in a good way. You'd be able to tour it in a good way. You'd be able to get on bills with bigger bands. Those bands would help develop you and teach you. A&R, artists and repertoire, that's gone. Development's gone, you know? It used to be a label would find you and they'd invest in you for 5 years. I mean, even if your first record tanked and they believed in your art, they would go on the ride with you. You know, Tom Petty talks about this when Mudcrutch, his first band, happened and it completely dissolved, but they didn't want to lose Tom, you know. They just didn't know how to record yet. They didn't know how to tour. They didn't know how to be a band. And where would we all be if someone didn't take a chance and have the revenue to develop a band like Tom? That's what I'm saying. I don't really actually know what I'm talking about, I feel like, suddenly. I'm on the back of my tour bus, and I have to turn the air off, and it gets hot as fuck. But anyway, this conversation, it made me think, like, is there good music? And I thought, oh my god, you know, like, if you're a music lover, it's a great time to discover new music. And these 10 songs I picked are 10 songs from records from the last 5 years. Maybe you've heard of them, maybe you haven't. But these songs give me hope that good music is being made, and... That generations younger than me are having the same opportunities to be inspired that I was. So that's the deal. We're going to listen to those 10 songs. Before we do that, let me do a little bit of housekeeping. Bear with me. I'll try to keep it quick. We have a Patreon. Now, what Patreon is, since probably the first week or so that Ethan and I started this journey with Metallica, I don't think there were... I think maybe only one Metallica podcast existed. Now there are like 17,000, but... at the time, a lot of people would reach out and said, oh my god, we're so glad we finally have this community to be nerds about Metallica with. Someone even just to argue about Saint Anger with was like a treat for us all, you know? And from very early on, people wanted to find ways to sort of say thank you and donate to the show financially. So we partnered with this thing called Patreon, where you can go do that. And not only are we taking money or anything, we're giving things back for it. So everything you give, we're trying to pay it forward, either through gifts to listeners or to other patrons, or through t-shirts or contests, or we're trying to do these remote episodes where we come meet fans and all that stuff. We put it all back into the show. Now, we're going to hear from a commercial Ethan and I made a little later about Patreon, but for now, I wanted to say thank you to our new patrons this week. They are CJ Duckworth, which I got to ask... any relation to Turner Duckworth, who has done artwork for several Metallica records. Edgar Baradas, who is the chapter head of California to Self-Destruct. A very cool dude that I've been chatting with. I'm actually going to try to hang out with him in Los Angeles in the next 2 days. Always very cool to have these chapter heads dig the show. I mean, to get the seal of approval from chapter heads is a hell of a compliment, and god damn it, we'll take it. So thank you, Edgar. Appreciate you, dude. And our last one is Dennis Dahlgaard. And people who are supporting the show at that level, anything you hear in the show that you think is quality or that sets it apart or that's kinetic or has that can live, that's because of the Patreon. All right, we love that. We really believe in that. So thank you so much. I hope it's sincere. We kind of say the same thing every week, but I do hope the sincerity is coming through. We really do appreciate that. We're on all the socials. Come have fun with us on Instagram. We do this Instagram live shit. I might even do one tonight on the bus. We're on Facebook, of course. I'm not on there. Ethan's over there. I don't know what's going on over there. I'm sure everyone's having a terrible, miserable, nice time. We're on Twitter, of course, YouTube. We have a great website, metalupyourpodcast.com, where we have, amongst other things, luxurious, beautiful t-shirts. Maybe you don't know what Patreon is. You don't want to give your credit card to some weird website. But what you can do if you want to support the show is buy a t-shirt. They're $15, and that all goes back into the show. Last but not least, we've cultivated a very beautiful community of fans that we wouldn't have a show without them. And one of the ways that we dip in with them and take a pulse and see what's going on and shine a spotlight on our listeners is we read a handful of emails every week, and I'm going to do that now. Take a trip with me over to the email corner. Okay. Our first email is from Alex Whitting. Hey guys, Alex from Maidstone, England here again. Wanted to tell you about my 10-year-old daughter, Erin. She was a huge pop fan until I bought Hardwired, and now anytime we go out in the car, she demands Halo on Fire and Here Comes Revenge. Hardwired is such an incredible album that's helped me bond even more with my daughter. Just sums up the power of the band. Much love, guys. That's cool, Alex. I'm having a similar experience with my kid with the Beatles. The Beatles are now her favorite band. And I take her to school every morning, and she knows all the words to All You Need Is Love, and Here Comes the Sun, I'll Follow the Sun, Your Mother Should Know, and it brings a tear to my eye sometimes, like, oh, this music that is so important to me, and makes me feel like a kid again. My own kid is deriving joy from it, and we're sharing it. Oh, it's such a beautiful thing. So I very much understand what you're saying, and thank you for sharing that, Alex. Ken Lara says, hello, C and E. Currently on the second of the Binge and Purge episodes, and I love that you guys, just like my iTunes playlists, have a varied and awesome variety. Random mentions of hip-hop, Taylor Swift, light rock, hard rock, everything. Then the mention of probably my favorite video game franchise ever, The Legend of Zelda. This is why I love your show. Keep up the great work. Thank you for all your hours put into this podcast. I'm glad you appreciate that, Ken. Ethan and I have very eclectic music tastes. We love music, and Ethan, in fact, is gearing up to make his debut solo reggae record with our friend Paul Moak. Paul! And I think you're going to hear a lot of that variety here on the radio show today, because, as you will hear, I love all kinds of music, as long as it's good. Ken goes on to say, Kenny from Los Angeles, New Jersey, P.S. Clint, love the Load Reload era. Master of Puppets is my favorite album. I love all their fast stuff, but those two albums solidified my love for the band. A little blues, hard rock, alternative, personal lyrics. Just love the grooviness and slower drum beats. I couldn't agree more, dude. You summed up everything good about those records, by the way. Bravo. He says, the S&M videos are some of my favorites because of James's awesome voice and Lars was on point. More Load talk, please. Well, well, all right. More Load. The people have spoken. Ken Lara has spoken. The reason I'm laughing is because there's definitely people that want me to not talk about it as much. And I understand their plight. I'm drinking a whiskey over here. It's 5:05 p.m., by the way. All right, moving right along here. Robert Marr, who's a patron of the show, says, hey, brothers. Recently discovered your podcast and have been listening daily as I backtrack on past episodes. The Master Puppets backdrop story with Wayne Summers and the Pyro story with our friend Matt Thomas were brilliant episodes. I love how your show provides insight into this cool world that we all know and love. As Justice was my first Metallica album with Blackened as the opening track, I was instantly hooked. My friend in fourth grade had their tape of it and played it for me one night. I was stunned, as I've never heard anything like it before. The opening for Blackened builds anticipation for what is simply a killer opening riff to an album. I knew right then and there that I would have to continue listening to this record. He says, as time went on, I dove into the previous record, starting with Kill 'Em All, quite the jump from Justice. But Kill 'Em All is pure, rugged, thrashy as fuck, and a great first album. Yep, I agree. I actually had an Uber driver yesterday who, just through our conversation, was talking about he's a huge Metallica fan from Mexico City. And his favorite Metallica record is Kill 'Em All, which, you know, that's rare. I thought that was cool. Robert goes on to say, a few points I'd like to discuss. Here are my five underappreciated songs: Dyer's Eve, To Live Is to Die, Escape, Attitude, and Trapped Under Ice. That's a good list. Very, very happy to see Attitude there. He says, as a Metallica fan who's seen 20 shows starting in 96 with the poor Retouring Me show, it's something that's so special to me whenever they're on tour that I have to see them. As they are in the tail end of their career, I will take any opportunity I can to see them live. Life is tough with a wife, two kids, and a job, which I definitely agree with. It gets harder and harder, doesn't it? He says, thank you guys for the podcast. Love the format. Keep doing what you do. Cheers, brothers. Rob from New York. Well, thanks, Rob. Moving right along here, I think we got two more. I think we have 25 more. I'm sorry, we don't. We only have a few more. Eric Moore, who I believe is my friend who came and saw me play on the Bob Schneider run in Seattle. He says, how dare you take a week off from the podcast, Ethan? Just kidding, of course. I really enjoyed listening to all the deep cuts. I find myself jamming out to the deep cuts of Load and Reload more often than anything else. I don't know. I just think there are some brilliant and underrated songs that don't get enough love. Well, needless to say, my friend, I agree with you. Eric says, I also really enjoyed hearing Cover Our World Black in Volume 1. Now, if you don't know what that is, it's an EP that Ethan and I made where we covered a bunch of deep cuts exclusively for our patrons as a way to say thank you. Volume 2 is being cooked up in the old music kitchen currently. I just added a little salt and pepper to Mama Said just yesterday. I added a little hot sauce to Whiskey in the Jar, and a little bit of pepperoncinis to Where the Wild Things Are. I don't know what Ethan's doing yet, but Volume 2 is looking to be very good. Anyway, sorry. Eric says, as a musician, I appreciate the directions you both took the songs to, not only to do them justice, but also to put your own spin on them. Inevitably, I can definitely hear a ton of love for the material, the band, the process, and your listeners in each track. It may be the most genuine collection of cover material I've heard in a very long time, and in that spirit, I think the Metallica boys would be proud. Thank you for putting that out there for us to enjoy. Well, shit, dude. Thank you so much for that really wonderful compliment. The EP landed well with Metallica fans. If people didn't like it, they haven't told us yet. Nor should they begin. But people seem to like it, and it really did require a lot of time and energy, and it's very gratifying to know that it paid off. He says, finally, I did watch the Cliff Burton documentary, and while I feel there are some parts of it that are interesting because we don't hear very many stories about Cliff pre-Metallica, it does come off as a bit exploitative at times, as it has these random interviews with members of some unknown band who don't really have anything to do with Metallica or Cliff. It's almost as if the filmmaker also had an agenda to promote someone else's band through talking about Cliff and Metallica. To me, that's pretty low. On the other hand, you guys have your own podcast where you could easily self-promote constantly, yet you choose not to, which is actually pretty fucking cool. Keep on keeping on, fellas. Eric. Thanks, dude. Yeah, the general consensus is that documentary is not worth giving a lot of heat to. So, moving right along here. Dennis Delgard, one of our new patrons, says, dear Ethan and Clint, congratulations on the success of your labor of love project that is Metal Up Your Podcast. Pat yourselves on the back. You have now even reached Copenhagen, Denmark, which of course he says is in New Jersey. I discovered your show late last year looking for Metallica and metal rock related podcasts, and I'm now a regular listener, a fan of your show, as well as a new patron. Your enthusiasm, sense of humor, and passion are all highly contagious. With you both being touring musicians, I hope these are the only things contagious about you. And I highly recommend you to all and any Metallica fans. I could riff on that for a second, but I'll leave it. I'll resist the temptation. Thank you for the great podcast. Keep up the good work. Here's some random thoughts on Metallica and the podcast. Number one, the Dave skits are awesome. Well, I'm pretty sure we got one cooked up here again because old David Mustang had quite the Twitter spree once again. He says, why did Ethan have to make Torben, who is a Dane, German? That's just mean. Well, it's because our accents, truthfully, are not very good. We don't have a lot of muscle to flex in that department. So it's all just sort of this vague Austrian, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger spinoff. He says, underrated Metallica songs and covers include Astronomy, Wasting My Hate, Helpless, That Was Just Your Life, Remember Tomorrow, and Here Comes Revenge. I agree with all those. Obviously, two of those were on my last episode. He says, do you know that Metallica's first concert outside the Roskilde Festival in Copenhagen was in my hometown of Holstebro in 87, which is more or less in the Danish Bible Belt? Whoa. Are there religious people in Denmark? Did that happen? Did that live up there? He says, at the very same show, the police force from all the regions was called in due to the threat of a rivaling biker gang attending the show. Wow. That used to be a real thing. You'd have to just go and worry that you wouldn't be caught in the goddamn crossfire of biker gangs. Now we're debating if we should put our cell phones in little bags or not. Back then it was like, kill or be killed, motherfucker.
Yeah, but I'll just... I'll put my cell phone in a bag, but what if my wife texts me?
I don't know if you just heard me, but that over there is my chopper, and I have a little baggie that hangs off the chopper that you can put accoutrements in, and I've got a fucking dagger in there, and I'll kill your ass.
Oh, well, 21 and up, though, you have to buy alcohol, and they request that you refrain from clapping until in between each songs.
I'm going to take your head, put it in a vice, a la Scorsese's Casino, and I'm going to squeeze it till your fucking eye pops out. If they don't play Jump in the Fire, that's what I'm going to do if they don't play Jump in the Fire. What do you think about that? I love this biker guy talking to the kid. Kid has no clue how much danger he's in. But isn't that what was used to be kind of fun about shows? Is this element of real danger. Like, the band you went to see won't come out because one guy's sick. And then people just go from being totally chill to just, like, pulling the chairs out of the ground and setting them on fire and turning cop cars over and shit. There is a part of me that longs for that chaos. Anyway, the rest of the email says, that's the end. Dennis from Copenhagen, Denmark, New Jersey. Thanks, Dennis. Danny Santana writes, dear Clint, Marty Mustaine Wells, really enjoyed the format of the Metal Up Your Podcast radio episode. Definitely thought you did a good job hosting. You'll be glad to know all the deep cuts you played are ones I listen to frequently, so they're getting some level of appreciation. He says, I hadn't checked out that version of Holier Than Thou, but man, it's bitchin', and also fuck yes on the Minus Human Love. Jason with the BGVs, so killer. S&M was my intro to Metallica when I was in middle school in the early 2000s, so I have a soft spot for these versions. Thanks again and always for the great content, and Ethan, congrats on the success of your Kickstarter campaign. Can't wait to get my hands on that album. Metal up your podcast asses. Yes, Ethan, I'll brag on my boy here, he started a Kickstarter goal that I believe started at 7,000, which was a good goal. Like, for 7,000, he was going to make a great record. And that him and Paul sort of worked together to, like, really figure out what the budget needed to be that wasn't too much of a strain on Ethan's fans, but would also make a great record. They hit that shit, like, immediately, like in one day or something. And now they're doing these stretch goals, and they're at, like, 10 grand now. And they were already going to make a great record at 7. I mean, to add $3,000 of that, which, by the way, is not going in their pockets. I mean, that's going to more production value for the record. So we're all going to benefit from that. If you don't know what it is, go check it out. Look up Ethan Luck. He's making a reggae record. I've heard all the demos. The motherfucker can write the songs, and it's sonically going to be awesome. So give him some shout out to Ethan there. All right, we got two more here. Dylan Peden says, hi guys, loved last week's episode featuring the Mail Up Your Podcast radio. Clint, you did a great job picking the list of songs. Great taste and variety. This episode really helped me form a deeper appreciation for songs such as Carpe Diem Baby and Minus Human. Also, the Dave Mustaine bit was hysterical. Nice story! Hope you guys do the radio series more often, even when both of you are online. Pure gold. Much respect from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, Dylan. Well, we did decide that the radio show went so well that what we're going to start doing is, in a normal situation, we're doing back-to-back here with me. Which, for those of you who prefer Ethan, I apologize. Ethan balances my flavor out. I have more of the grumpy. More of the grumps. I'm like the pepper. He's like the salty to the pepper. You know? He's like the jelly to my peanut butter. He balances it all out, man. He's the yin to my yang. What I'm trying to say, Ethan, is, will you marry me? But we are going to do them more often. We're going to make them bonus episodes. So there'll be no housekeeping, no emails or go support this. We're just going to launch into Metal Up Your Podcast Radio. And I think we're going to do that maybe at least once a month, maybe even twice a month. So I'm glad you dig it. Our last email, Daniel Kazakulik. How's it going, guys? Been loving all the recent episodes as usual, and I've been spreading the word about your podcast to friends, both Metallica fan and non-fan. Becoming a patron has been a greatly rewarding monetary investment, specifically with the cover EP and Lunar Satan tracks. Oh, I forgot about that. Which, by the way, Daniel, thank you again for supporting the show at that level. You also get the Lunar Satan tracks. Okay? For those of you who don't know what that is, it is a tongue-in-cheek satanic metal side project that I've started as an offshoot of a joke from the podcast. And you get those tracks when you become a patron. He says, anytime I played the tracks for friends, there's been nothing but positive feedback, so thanks and please keep up the great work. My brother and I just bought tickets to the Albany show in October, and I believe Clint mentioned on the show you guys will also be there if you'd be down to meet up and hang out. Also, Clint, you mentioned that you'll be in Redwood City on May 23rd, and I live right by there. Let me know if you'd be down to meet up and grab a beer. Oh, yes. I will respond. I'll respond to that email. I don't know when this is going to be out. He says, as always, thanks for taking time out of each of your busy schedules to bring us great content every week. As with so many other listeners of the show, it's given me something to look forward to every Monday. Cheers. Thanks for the kind words, dude. Yeah, as far as we know, Albany's on the table, and we want to try to figure out a way to have a party. So I think what we're going to try to do is come the night before and have some sort of party and try to get all of our New England fans and friends out there. And Jim Florentine has said that if he's going to that show, he thinks, and he's going to come to the party if he's available and do some stand up and hang out with everybody. So, as of now, Albany's happening, and we love meeting up and hanging out with all of you. I got to hang out with Tom Trinkeller two nights ago out here on the West Coast. I'm going to see Edgar tomorrow. Ethan, as of right now, currently while I'm saying this, is in Manhattan hanging out with our friends Sarah and Pete and Gene. So we love that stuff. And we love hearing from you guys. You can send us an email at metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. We might read it on the thing. All right, let's get the fuck out of here and go check out some radio songs. All right, well, first up, I've made no bones about it. I'm a Lana Del Rey fan. And there was a time, not so long ago, when I was unaware of how badass she was. I was dismissive. And I don't know what turned the corner for me. I did not like that video game song. That was her big kind of thing at the time. And she was sort of notorious for, I guess she didn't perform it very well on Saturday Night Live. I don't know. I don't care. But I got her first record, Born to Die, and there's a song on it called Off to the Races. And I heard that song and was literally stunned by it. That's not the song I'm about to play. And then I, of course, looked up. I was like, surely some other person wrote it. And it's like, no, she wrote that shit. Come to find out, she writes a lot of her stuff. And she's into this, like, kind of old classic Hollywood noir shit. She kind of plays this dark character. I love everything about it. I love the theater of it. It's very sensual music. It goes down easy. The themes are dark, but they feel very real and grounded in what life really feels like. But they have all this great Billy Wilder Sunset Boulevard shimmer on them. I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but the song I want to play for you is a song called West Coast, which was off her second album, Ultraviolence, from 2014. It was written by her and her main collaborator, Rick Knowles, produced by Dan Auerbach of the Black Keys. And the song's cool. It's elements of psychedelic rock, soft rock, indie, some reggae, some swing. It's a journey. So I invite you to put on some headphones, or if you're in your car, turn that shit up, and let's check out some West Coast by Lana Del Rey. Thank you. I don't know, man. I find that mesmerizing. I mean, I just find it utterly captivating. And you know, if you guys like visual counterparts to that, there's a pretty bitchin' creepy video with it too. Like, she's kind of with these two kind of types of bad boys. You know, she's with this like young guy on a beach, and then she's in this car with this like older suave dude. It's like super fucking. There's just a lot going on. It seems like, you know, it's exciting, it's scary, and beautiful, and. That's my favorite Lana record. She did a record after that called Honeymoon, and then she's got a newer one called Lust for Life. They're all that good. And, of course, her first one, Born to Die. Like, so, if you've kind of, you've heard she's some sort of, like, disposable pop chick, I'm just asking you to reconsider. If that song didn't convince you, good God, what will? All right. Next up, a little bit of a sad chapter here on Metal Up Your Podcast Radio. We recently are celebrating a year since Chris Cornell left the planet to go back home to his alien mothership where he came from, because he increasingly to me feels like a gift that a higher species gave us. I miss him every much as I did when I learned that he passed away, and it's still the sting of senselessness is still strong in me. And right before he died, Ethan told me about a record he made called Higher Truth. It came out in 2015. And I was sort of tacitly aware that he'd made solo records, like big fan of the of his song Seasons on the the soundtrack, the single soundtrack. And then he had that Euphoria Morning record, which I think I even had that record. I always kind of liked it, you know. But Ethan was telling me, "Oh, this record Higher Truth is like really special and it's really different." And so of course I went and checked it out. And it's produced by Brendan O'Brien, who has produced a lot of Pearl Jam shit and Stone Temple Pilots. It's his fourth and final studio album. And it struck me, it rang me like a bell, dude, because I was wrestling with, like, it's a beautiful record, but it's very dark. And it's, it didn't dawn on me until after Chris's death that this record, in many ways, is kind of a call for help. It's like when Elliott Smith killed himself, we were all like, oh, all of his records were a suicide note. You know what I mean? There was this like terrible dawning of the prescience in the records, you know, of what this person was going through. And I could have chosen any of those songs from this record, Higher Truth, that I wanted to share with you guys to hip you to it, to turn you on to it. I chose a song called Murderer of Blue Skies. And, fuck it. Let's just listen to it and we'll talk about it in a minute. Check it out. Murderer of Blue Skies, Chris Cornell.
You flew along the wind, was a day that I won't forget. Told me to let you in, and that I will not regret it. But you had a touch as cool as rain, and all at once the weather changed. Murder of blue skies. I can't wait to never be.
up to falling for you only, man. Falling down, hey. Falling
Beautiful, right?
Fuck.
It's heavy. Now the truth will set you free, but all you had was lying in you, so you built a cage for me, all the while pretending to be a living saint with a thorny crown, and me condemned to be your clown. I applaud you as you take your bow. Wow. Brutal. That song strikes me as... It was like so kind of touching, romantic, and achy, but the lyric is so brutal. And as a songwriter, I just thought, how did he do that? Like, and he dedicated this record to his wife. And I know him and his wife kind of had this up and down thing. And through he struggled through addiction. And he was always kind of transparent about stuff like that. And just to write such a naked song, you know, I always considered the song to be like just naked and raw. And then to play it like for someone too, you know. And I went looking and I actually found this really cool interview that Cameron Crowe did. It's really short. I'll play this clip, but it's Cameron and Chris talking about that song. So let's check into that real quick.
It feels like the album that you made at the right time with all these experiences behind you. And what you're writing about is so powerful. It's a lot about love. A lot about love. And Murder of Blue Skies, for example, is the most loving anti-love song I could imagine. And it's just like, how do you write a song that tender that's also lyrically that tough?
You know, I guess I'm in a sense imagining a character, and some of it is autobiographical and, and some of it isn't, but it's the, I think being, for example, a sensitive kid who grows up kind of in the world of sort of adult relationships, my tendency has always been to kind of allow myself to accept responsibility for everything in some weird passive-aggressive way, like it's all my fault. And I think that's what this song is.
You flew in on the wind, was the day that I won't forget.
You fall in love with the heroine or anti-heroine of that song in as you begin it. You fall in love with her, and then you take the journey with the guy who says, I can't wait to live in a world without you in it.
And there's a promise in there right away. There's a naivety. There's a, you said everything would be awesome. You said you won't regret it. You know, just come into my world forever, and it'll be the best thing you ever did. And there's, I don't think there's, what maybe you're receiving is sort of still tender is that there's no real blame in there.
Right.
It's just, here's the perspective. Here's my perspective.
Right.
Here's my humble perspective over here.
Yeah. Like that guy's still capable of love.
Sure. And he was also capable of saying, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I won't regret it. Okay. I'll sign up for that.
I can't wait.
All right. How's everyone feeling out in Bummerville? I kind of live there. Not in like a sad way, but like, I don't know. Sad songs make me feel better and they make me happy. I know I'm not alone in that. Look, we're all Metallica fans. So we like dark music. There's something healing about it, and there's something that exercises all that angst and all those feelings. And I don't know if I'm just sort of doomed to it, or it's what happened to me as a kid, and therefore it's sort of the only model I know that works, and so I'll just carry that fucking dark flame to the bitter end. I don't know, but it's very hard for me to feel any type of spiritual healing from happy music. Which is kind of a dichotomy because the Beatles, I love the Beatles so much, but there's this dark edge in that shit too. Anyway, let's move along. this next song is actually from a band that Ethan and I discovered by doing the podcast. This is Brian King, the drummer for this band we're about to hear called Reality Suite. Reach out to the show. He's a big fan. He's a patron of the show. And he said, hey, I got this band. Check it out. I think you'll like it. It's pretty good. Now, that happens all the time. Even before the podcast, Ethan and I doing what we do. The openers for shows are people at shows. They give you their demo. They want you to hear their thing. Ethan and I we remember what that was like. We lived that way for a long time. We're very generous. And we give as much time as we can to that. It's very rarely good. That's just the state of it. And it was a real treat to hear some of this music from Brian and see that it's really fucking good. So they were doing a pledge campaign this time last year, and Ethan and I decided as Metal Up Your Podcast, we wanted to pledge to it, help them get that record made. They made it. So this is current. This came out this year. It's called Awaken. It's an EP. And I like the whole thing, and I wanted to play a different song, but Brian, he thought this song would be better for all you folks out there. It's called Live Now Forever, and it was written by Brian and Joe Padula. And this is a New Jersey-based hard rock band. So you know, this is good because my list is heavily pop music. And I know that we do a Metallica podcast and you guys are going, where's the goddamn motherfucking metal? Well, here's a little taste of it. Let's listen to Live Now Forever by Reality Suite.
You're not sorry. Not sorry, we can fight through it.
see, I hear songs like that and bands like Reality Suite that are doing this like now. Like that record just came out, okay? And when you're on some fucking forum somewhere where people just pretend to be brave and who don't know shit, or there's no one makes good music anymore. It's over. No, you're lazy. And you don't know shit. People are risking a lot to people because they have to make this music because, you know, like, we're doomed. We're fucked. We have to do this stuff. We're compelled to. We don't fit in the normal parts of society. You know what I mean? So the problem isn't that it's not being made or fought for. The problem is we've lost our ability to value it and our ability to support it. And I'm using the universal we. So I'm not just pointing fingers. Like, we're all in this together. And I'm not interested in being a fucking martyr for this. What I am interested in is encouraging people, inspiring people to care again about supporting the machinery that creates this art that we desperately need, right? Am I just like a bleeding... Am I one of these guys that... Like, do I just assign too much importance to it? Is music for people like... Oh, it's they. I like it the way I like... spelunking or watching NASCAR. I don't know. To me, it feels more important. Not that it's better, but it feels like music brings people together. It heals communities. It changes people's perspectives. Like, for example, I was born in Montgomery, Alabama, and I was raised in Birmingham. And just basically raised in a racist environment. A dumb racist environment, sexist also. A lot of bad ideas, right, came from sort of my surroundings. Not necessarily my mom. Well, not my mom at all, but not necessarily like family stuff. Just culture, and going up through the public school system in Pelham, Alabama, and all this. It really was music that taught me out of that, because I'd lay in bed at night and listen to Michael Jackson or Prince. And this idea that black people were whatever, less than, in whatever way, it just didn't make sense because to me they were like superheroes. Or that, or I would listen to Madonna and the idea that women who are promiscuous are lesser than or whatever. And it's just like, I don't get it. It's sexy and it's fun and it makes me feel good. It makes me feel like things are possible. Just this kid in a divorced family struggling with all the things that kids struggle with in the world, and you'd put headphones on and you're just, it's like a doorway into wherever the fuck you want to go. And guess who doesn't give a shit if your clothes look stupid or if you are fat or if you have pimples, which I had really bad acne in high school, like debilitating acne. Guess what doesn't give a fuck about any of that? Your favorite records. Doesn't that feel important? I don't know. But I hear Reality Suite and I'm like, okay, we're okay. The problem isn't there. There's like people arguing outside the bus, I think. Anyway, how about that solo too, man? Motherfucker's gonna give Lunar Satan a run for their money. I gotta brag on Brian a little bit too, man. He sent me a care package the other day. I came home from a run on tour. He gave me their last record, Skin, which I don't have a way to play it because I don't have a CD player. But he gave me a bunch of promotional shit from a record store from the Load era. Like that badass picture of them on the back of Load looking like goddamn Francis Ford Coppola Godfathers that I know people hate. I get it. People hate that shit. They want Metallica to keep looking like California rednecks. I thought they looked like rock stars for the first time, and I loved it. It like had those posters and had all these like, it just had all this like promo crap from like a record store, and I'm obviously taking some of it for me, but we're gonna be giving away in contests in the future. He also sent me some Kiss 8-track cassettes, which is just so fun. Like I have them in my studio. So anyway, thanks to Brian, he's got a kick-ass band. I would not have played that if I didn't like it. Believe that. So moving right along here, what do we got up next? You've heard me talk about it last few weeks. So A Perfect Circle, one of my favorite bands, has a new record called Eat the Elephant. and I've been spending a lot of time with this record. It's quite deep. It's quite deeper than I initially thought. It came out this year, and there's a song on it called Disillusioned, written by Billy Howerdale and Maynard James Keenan, produced by Dave Sardi. Let's listen to Disillusioned, and we'll talk about it a little bit.
back to the residence now. You were never an island. You and me, voice among the lay in this choir. Tuning into each other, lift all higher.
Oh, man. You know what feels really special about that song? So obviously a critique of social interaction, the dissolution of meaningful connection, right? First one, we've been overrun by our animal desire, addicts of the immediate, keep us obedient and unaware. Feeding this mutation, this Pavlovian despair, we've become disillusioned, so we run towards anything glimmering. That's kind of like classic Maynard James Keenan scathing societal criticism, right? But what feels really different about this song and this record, the whole record, is the pleading and the hopefulness. It's not this sort of young, he's not in his 30s and angry, he's in his 50s, and he's wanting to inspire change, right? He says, time to put the silicone obsession down, take a look around, find a way in the silence, lie supine, away with your back to the ground, dis and reconnect to the resonance now. You were never an island. Unique voice amongst the many in this choir, tuning into each other, lift all higher. I mean, shit, that brings a goddamn tear to my eyes some nights. I listen to that record when I go to bed every night. Especially on a bus when it's just, you know, you got to drown out the noise and somehow trick your brain into not knowing that you're hurtling 80 miles an hour in a tube of death with everything out of your goddamn control. Who knows what could happen while you're sleeping? Anyway, that song just is like an onion. It's very layered to me, and the more I listen to it, the more I'm just blown away by the attention to detail and care, and the hopefulness of it. It's just, I don't know, man. It feels like a new leaf for them, and the record's not getting a lot of love, I think, because people are misunderstanding all that sort of energy. Because people want, it's like some people, we just want our artists to make the same records over and over, right? We deal with this as Metallica fans, right? We love them because they evolve and they challenge themselves and they grow and they stretch and they push boundaries and find frontiers and all this. But it's hard because we love Master of Puppets, and why can't you guys just do that again? Or maybe we love the Black Album and let's do that again. Or maybe we love Fixer and Where the Wild Things Are and let's just get back to that. Or some of us even love Saint Anger, right? And why can't they do the drop-tuned, thrashy, trash can crap again? We want them sort of stuck in time, and that's just not how life is, right? And I guess you can get off the ride, but, you know, I choose to hang in there with these people. When Merit and Noms came out, Perfect Circle's first record, it was like being hit by a fucking bolt of lightning. Are you kidding me? I couldn't believe what I was listening to. And then 13th Step came out and just doubled down on it all, but still moved forward, right? So those records were so important to me that all these years later, if they're going to put out another thing, I'm going to check it out, like almost out of respect for the relationship we have. Does that make sense? Do you? You know what? Let's get out of super heavy town and go into mild heavy town. There is this Australian singer-songwriter I love to death. You've heard me talk about her. Her name's Courtney Barnett. And in 2013, she put out her first real record. It's called the Double EP, Sea of Split Peas. And this is a song called Avant Gardener. And it's a very... She's a great wordsmith. And this is basically a song about her having a panic attack, which I don't know how many of you out there deal with panic attacks. I've had one in my life. It was on an airplane. It's one of the worst things that's ever happened to me. And this is her sort of describing a panic attack, and it just feels she nailed it. All right, so let's dip in on Courtney Barnett. This is called Avant Gardener. Dig it.
Time when I was really sick and I had too much pseudo effort.
Oh man, I love that. It's got this like great droning quality. It's sort of hypnotic, right? And I don't know, maybe you guys hated that, but she's got a very endearing, kind of charming delivery. And I just love the cleverness of the lyrics, you know? This is anaphylactic and super hypochondriactic. Should have stayed in bed today. I much prefer the mundane. I take a hit from an asthma puffer. I do it wrong. I was never good at smoking bongs. I'm not that good at breathing in. There's just, I don't know, there's something sort of loose and fun about that that I really appreciate from her. And all of her records are like that. They sort of pendulum swing from very, very heavy, like real stuff to clever comments on what life's like and what relationships are like. And I appreciate that bit of levity. All right, moving right along. A Danish artist that I have just fallen in love with over the last 18 months. It's M-O, but it's pronounced Moo. And this is a pop chick, and she's done a whole bunch of crazy stuff. But I've honed in on her records, her original stuff. This is from an album called No Mythologies to Follow from 2014. And she wrote it herself. It was produced by Ronnie Vindal. And I came across this chick. I was staying up late on the bus one night, and we had one of those like satellite music video channels. So it's like, there's like a million of them. I don't know what we landed on or whatever, but this video came on really late by this other pop chick named Elephant, and it was a song called One More, and it's kind of like a duet with Moo. And this video is just fucking captivating. I Shazammed it to see what it was, bought the record that immediately, and kind of got turned on to this Moo chick through that, and then started kind of consuming all her stuff. So let's dip into this song called Pilgrim, and we'll talk a little bit about it afterwards. So this is Moo and Pilgrim. Check it out.
Oh,
I'm not gonna lie to you guys, I think that's my favorite song out of all these. It's just, and you know what's fun about music and different kinds of music is, I don't know what the fuck she's talking about. I don't know what the song means. It's called Pilgrim. Who knows? But for some songs, it doesn't matter, you know? I will say, for the most part, I mostly am kind of honed in on lyrics, and I like a song that tells a good story, that has a lot of plot elements that we all like in normal storytelling. I think the best songs do that, take you kind of on a journey that has a beginning and an end and all that stuff. But some songs are just sort of these emotional snapshots that are, you know, they're dreamlike. And not only do I like those songs a lot, but I am really fascinated by them from a songwriting standpoint, because that's a very hard thing to do, you know? It may seem easy, like on paper, like, oh, just write nonsense, or just like write a collage of words that the meaning doesn't matter as much as the way the words sound and the phrasing and the how they phonetically sort of dance with each other. That's hard to fucking do. But God damn it, I listen to that song every day. And all of, if you like that, all of her stuff is that good. So check that out. Let's move on. Again, some of you out there saying, where's the goddamn hard rock? What happened to Clint? What's going on? Well, this is a little band called Ghost. You've all heard of them, I think, I hope, I don't know. I wanted to give them some love. This is a song from a 2016 album called Pope Star. It's just an EP, and it's mostly covers, but there's this one original song written by, it's technically written by a ghoul, which is what they do this whole theater thing, but likely written by mastermind Tobias Forge. Let's check out a little satanic heavy metal with a little song called Square Hammer. Right. I mean, people are telling you there's not good hard rock music being made these days. There's your ammunition right there. I mean, fuck, that is a great song. A great song. Great guitar solos, that great, like, synthy hook. There's this very cool undercurrent of 80s. I could tell Tobias, I don't know how old he is. Good God, he's probably younger than me, but that motherfucker has listened to the 80s. And not, I'm not talking about Cure 80. I'm not talking about, like, The Cure or The Smiths. Cool 80s. I'm talking about that dude was listening to fucking Depeche Mode, which that's cool, too. I didn't mean that's not cool. But he was listening to Talking Heads, Depeche Mode, Simple Minds. There's a huge, you know, influence there. And people have who have been digging the Lunar Satan shit have rightly pointed out that Lunar Satan is heavily influenced by Ghost. Musically, but also just in the freedom to explore those themes, right? It's like, is it controversial anymore, like, to sing about shit like that? He's dressed like an evil pope, and it's obviously theater and drama. People are just less uptight about that kind of shit, right? Like, people used to protest Kiss concerts because I guess they thought they were some sort of fucking detectives or something, but they claimed that KISS was an acronym for, check this out, Knights in Satan's Service. I'm like, have you guys listened to it? It's just a bunch of songs. It's like Paul Stanley singing a bunch of love songs about fucking chicks, although of course he was talking about fucking dudes. But it's like, how are you going to hear... I Was Made for Loving You, Knights in Satan's Service? Have these guys heard of cattle decapitation? Have these guys heard of a single fucking verse of Cannibal Corpse? No, but KISS is the satanic enemy. I dipped into Cannibal Corpse. I saw someone posted on Reddit or something like, oh, you won't be able to watch this video or whatever. And so, of course, that for me, I'm like a kid in an elevator to hit every button. And I watched some Cannibal Corpse thing. And it look, I grew up on horror films. I came online as a human being. My first memory, okay, is watching A Nightmare on Elm Street. Huge horror freak. Every horror movie you can think of, I've seen, except for one. There's one I've refused to watch called a Serbian film. Look up what it's about and you'll understand why I won't watch it, especially as a father. But I live for this shit. Now, this Cannibal Corpse stuff, I went and read a smattering of their lyrics. It's too much for me. It's straight up too much. This dude is going, if he hasn't already, he will kill. This guy is obsessed with killing people. So I'll just put that there. But no, KISS is the enemy because they wrote a song called Love Gun. Detroit Rock City, I Stole Your Love, Got Love for Sale, Firehouse, Deuce, Rock and Roll All Night and Party Every Day. They're the Satanists to look out for. Do you? Okay, we got a few more here, folks. There is a band that I love almost more than anything on the planet called the Damwells. Now, they don't exist anymore, sadly. They couldn't get past a certain level. It had nothing to do with how good they are. They're one of the best bands I've ever heard. Brooklyn-based rock band, influenced heavily by Cheap Trick, Tom Petty. They wrote pop-oriented rock songs, but they had this really cool, strange lyric edge and a bit of a melody edge, too. And I discovered them when I was just a fucking kid. I was maybe 16, 17. I saw them at a festival in Birmingham, Alabama. They were playing a daytime slot. People were sort of interested, coming up front and stuff. It started raining, and everyone split. And the lead singer, Alex Deason, went on this very humorous tirade. What are you guys going to fucking melt in all this? And then local roadies were running out to move like the front line, like the monitors and stuff, out of the rain, right? And Alex just, in protest, went and stood out in the rain playing a Gold Top Les Paul, a very expensive guitar, in the rain, like in protest. And I just thought, that just emblazoned on my mind, like, what rock and roll is. Needless to say, I went to the merch tent, bought bought whatever record they had out, which was their only record. This is how long ago. It's called PMR Plus One, Poor Man's Record, because they recorded it in various hotel rooms and I think even like storage units. Hence why it's called Poor Man's Record. And I followed that band throughout their whole career, and there was this very shady, seedy, beautiful, shitty rock club in Birmingham called Nick. And it was my dream as a kid to go play there. I had a fake ID, not so I could buy booze, but just so I could go to the Nick, all right, to see the Damwells. Ended up befriending some of the guys. I'm still friends with a few of them to this day. Those guys taught me about rock and roll. And this is, they got back together. So they had some various lineup changes and stuff. In 2015, original lineup got back together, wrote a record together, at least according to the liner notes. And it's self-titled, The Damwells. And this is a song called Lost. Let's dip in on The Damwells. What a great chorus, or a great hook, rather. It's kind of this, like, chorus, post-chorus thing. So good. Achy and, hits all the spots. Such a special band to me. If you're looking for some place to start with them, I personally recommend their second record called Bastards of the Beat. I believe it's from 2003. That's where you're really going to get bit by the Damwells bug, and then you're going to buy all their shit forever, and you'll thank me for it. You won't even write an email. You're going to take a quill pen from the 1800s, and you're going to have a little ink bowl or whatever the fuck, and you're going to write me a handwritten letter in, like, old English saying thank you for introducing you to the Damwells. All right, we're here at our last song. We've arrived. If you guys are still on the ride with me, we did it. It's about 117,000 degrees in the back of this bus. My whiskey is almost gone. We've been listening and discovering music together. It's been beautiful, right? Well, don't go saying bye yet, okay? We got one more. Now, I cheated a little bit because I was going to put... This last song is going to be by an artist that I'm sure you've all heard of. Maybe you haven't investigated. And she goes by the name Lord, L-O-R-D-E. And I was originally going to put a song called Perfect Places on here to close this out. It's the last song on her new record, Melodrama. But I decided not to do that. And I decided I wanted to play a song, a deep cut from her first record, which is 2013, all right? It's one more year beyond my cutoff. Her first record was called Pure Heroine. And it had many big hits. Of course, Royals, international, smash hit. Tennis Court was a hit. Team was a hit. All right. But track two on that record is my favorite. And it's a song called 400 Lux. And let's dip into it and take a listen, and we'll talk a little bit about what makes it so special. Here is Lord with 400 Lux.
Where we can soar.
And that was Lord with 400 Lux from the record Pure Heroine, one of my favorites. I'm really glad she's on the planet making music because she's got a very unique perspective. She's very scary and dark, and she's very interesting, right? And do we want to become the get off my lawn people? Do we want to turn into these people that think that what we were into when we were young is the only good thing? I don't. I'm afraid of that. And I'm not posturing. I'm not pretending to like this shit. I like it. But as we all get older together, we have to just keep our ear to the ground, right? Like, we have to sort of exercise that muscle. Because there's good shit. There's good shit out there. This idea, there's nothing good anymore. I hate that. Hopefully the last hour of music convinced you otherwise as well. And you know what? Our fans are super smart and cool. You guys probably didn't even need that convincing. If anything, that was an hour of us just sharing music together. I appreciate you guys being on the ride with us and giving us a break while we're in a really odd touring schedule where Ethan and I are both very busy in different ways. So we are dedicated to being back on track next week. Metal Up Your Podcast Radio will live on, but it will be bonus episodes. So those of you who need that Metallica fix are going to get it. Those of you who enjoy kind of learning a little bit more about what makes me and Ethan tick as artists and musicians, the bonus episodes will be there for you. And, you know, I'm going to do like my favorite female artists. I'm going to do my favorite songs from the 70s. We're going to have different themes for every installment. But the podcast is up and well. We're growing every week still. Ethan and I are very much still in love with the band. Very excited to be curating and leading us all through Metallica Talk together. We love all of you very much. We're very grateful for everyone who takes the time to listen every week. We couldn't do it without you. I'm sure you all have. If you haven't, please consider go leaving us an iTunes review. It really goes a long way. It helps. Our Patreon giveaways, we're having to just move that to June just because of logistics. We got prizes we're giving away. We're going to be giving away prizes. We're going to be giving away prizes once a month. This week just got a little squirrely. Sorry, my tour manager just came in and interrupted me. My whole chain of thought, my whole flow. He doesn't even know. Where are we at on this? Let's see. I'll do a clicky click because I may want to edit this. Go check out the Patreon. Consider getting on the ride at that level. It's very cool over there. We're trying to cultivate a bunch of cool shit over there. Send us an email, metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. Let us know what you think about Metal Up Your Podcast Radio. How can we make it better? What can we do to improve the experience for you all? We're open to that kind of stuff. You know? We're cool. We're down. We're hip. We're jive. We know what the fuck's going on. I'm cool. I'm hip. All right, good God, I don't know what else to say. Again, without my partner in crime, it's your lonely co-host, Clint Wells, saying we love you. We'll see you on the flip-flop. Peace.
Captured your heart.